pleasure to be here. Let's start. The Estonian Song Celebration is an enormous open air choral concert, one of the largest amateur choral events in the world. The number of participants can reach up to 25,000, singing to an audience of 90,000 or even more. The present day song celebrations are held at the Tallinn Song Festival grounds, a purpose-built venue from 1959 with an arched stage and a fire tower. The first song festival took place in the summer of 1869 in Tartu, the second largest city in Estonia. Starting with the sixth song festival, the festival tradition moved to Tallinn, the capital city of Estonia. Last year, in July 2014, we celebrated the 26th song celebration titled Touched by Time, the Time to Touch. Considering the song festival's 145-year old history, the irregularity with which these events have taken place and the choral repertoire and participants' experiences handed down from generation to generation, one must say that it is a long tradition full of vitality. Thanks to the song festivals, Estonians consider themselves to be the singing nation, a term that includes both historical and modern aspects. The first of these is the commonly held idea that the Song Festival in 1869 created a firm basis for the process that has been called singing oneself into a nation. More than a century later, the so-called singing revolution began with hundreds of thousands of people gathering at the Song Festival grounds to make political demands and to liberate themselves through singing from the Soviet domination. Therefore, it can be considered that the Song Festival has been the most conspicuous and massive manifestation of cultural and political nationalism in Estonia. In other words, according to cultural studies, the song festivals are an important part of the narrative template underlying Estonian cultural memory, which the Estonian historian Marek Tamm defines as the great battle for freedom. Consequently, in exploring the festivals of the Soviet period, two fundamental questions arise. First, how was it possible that the Soviet totalitarian regime allowed the celebration of the song festivals, while their primary goal and the essence of it was to affirm the national identity of the oppressed, nation building and the battle for freedom? Secondly, were there any specific features that the Soviet era introduced in the organization and the political significance of the song celebration? In this presentation, my aim is to answer these questions from two different positions, from the point of view of the oppressors as well as from the point of view of the oppressed. First, I will describe the events from the perspective of the Soviet power. I will explain why the totalitarian regime allowed the Estonian Song Festivals to continue. In the second half of the presentation, I will discuss the meaning of song celebration for Estonians and whether or not it changed during the five decades of Soviet occupation. The key concept in this discussion is cultural and political nationalism. In my opinion, the construction and interpretation of this very term paradoxically caused the persistence of the tradition of song celebrations. And since these issues are complex and there are no simple black and white answers to these questions, I will use some aspects and terms from cultural memory studies in my presentation. So, as mentioned above, the Estonian song celebration has an uninterrupted history. In the post-war era, the first song celebration took place in 1947, and altogether 10 festivals were held. although the Soviet Union lacked a similar open choir festival tradition, the totalitarian cultural doctrine was fond of mass events. And as a result of that, some larger scale festivals in Moscow and in Leningrad were organized in order to show the triumph of Soviet music and to encourage collectivism. In addition to that, a specific musical genre, namely march type mass songs, became genuinely popular in the 1930s. Thus, the new communist leadership held mass culture in high esteem and saw the Estonian song celebration as a means of propagating the Soviet cultural model and ideas. However, during the first Soviet song celebration in 1947, the Soviet regime used what is called cautious Sovietization by Yelena Zubkova. In the case of this song festival, it meant that the repertoire consisted of mainly Estonian songs, and in the speeches it was emphasized that it is the Estonians' pride to continue the festivals. Furthermore, the new regime wanted to show off its superiority in comparison with the festivals of the bourgeois era, so the organization of the 1947 festival took place in a higher state level. Despite the difficult post-war situation, the authorities offered some benefits to the singers. So, the first song celebration of the Soviet era reflected the ambivalent communication relationship between the oppressors and the oppressed, expressing the feelings of both repulsion and attraction towards each other. A few years later, a sudden change in the cultural policy of the Soviet Union took place, which noticeably shaped the next song festival in 1950. One of the most spectacular manifestations of that was the resurfacing of the concept of nationalism and its subsequent transformation. As we know, the Soviet policy on nationalities was based on Stalin's formula from 1934, the development of cultures, national in form and socialist in content. In Soviet Estonia, the slogan national in form signified, among other things, the preservation of the song festival tradition. But, as already mentioned above, an unexpected ideological turn took place at the end of the 1940s. The gist of it was, first and foremost, to proclaim bourgeois nationalist a hostile ideology. Numerous Estonian composers were accused of bourgeois nationalism, and it was also identified in musical works and cultural events. Everything and everyone marked with the labels of bourgeois nationalism were eliminated from Soviet cultural life. In addition, socialist realism as the proper method of cultural production became more heavily emphasized than before, and greater privileges were asked for the Russian language. All of this indicated the arrival of a new phase in the building of Soviet society and culture, one that Stalin had, in fact, already described in his famous text. Namely, please look at this slide, with a full quotation from Stalin. I would like to stress here the expression ultimate fusion into one culture, and the same goal to move in the direction of unity can also be found in socialist realism. Please look at slide again. This means that the aim and idea of Soviet national and cultural policy was unity among lingual Soviet people and a culture that would be socialist in both form and content. In the case of Soviet song celebrations, such an aim entailed the implementation of different measures. The next festival in 1950 was preceded by a vast deportation of Estonians. Several prominent choir conductors and composers were accused of bourgeois nationalism, and some of them were arrested, The festival program included songs in Russian and so on. The next two festivals were characterized by similar intense politicization. So the Soviet regime used the song festivals as a means to achieve Soviet cultural unity. As we know, the cultural ideology of the Soviet Union fluctuated over the years depending on the political conditions of the moment. The second half of the 1960s and 70s was a period that was later labeled stagnation, but it was still liberal enough to allow the organization in 1969 of the Jubilee Song Festival, celebrating the centennial of the first song celebration. According to participants' memories, this was the phrase and the most powerful event during the whole Soviet era. The structure and repertoire were to a large extent copied from the first song celebration, and as you can see at the slide, some special ceremonies were held. If we were to ask why the Soviet authorities allowed such temporary freedom, then perhaps the Russian historian Elena Zubkova is right again in saying that in a sense Moscow avoided the reality and the confrontation in the field of cultural tradition in Baltic states and limited itself to symbolic action. In the second part of the presentation, I'm going to discuss the content and the significance of song celebration for Estonians. This section describes the tools, the procedures, and procedures whereby the song festival became a true symbol of the Estonian national culture. I will also identify and outline some factors that made this tradition so sustainable. The following reasoning is based on several historical accounts of the song festivals, as well as my own sometime participant observation during different song festivals. In the light of all the foregoing consideration, written sources and my own experiences as a participant, one might say as follows. First, song festivals were and still are described as some of the most important bearers of national identity and unity. Second, at the collective level, these ritualistic, regularly repeated events serve as means for maintaining Estonian cultural values. Thus, it can be said that the value and the meaning of song festivals has been passed on from generation to generation. In just for an appropriate research method to analyze such cultural practice and tradition, cultural memory studies as a method offers good means for such research. Cultural memory studies make it possible to find explanations and reasons why one ritualistic event, the song festival, and one ideology, cultural nationalism, have remained viable throughout the reign of a foreign power. I will point out only a few aspects from cultural memory studies. First of all, according to cultural memory studies, the search of community is designed as a result of social or cultural upheaval. Jan Asman has proposed the concept of fixed point for this upheaval. Cultural memory has its fixed point. These fixed points are fateful events of the past whose memory is maintained through cultural formation and institutional communication. End of quote. Considering that the Estonian nation has remembered itself often as a product of musical imagination, it could be derived that one of the most important fixed points was the first song celebration in 1869. Despite the fact that its example was borrowed from the Baltic Germans, It was still the first time that Estonians saw themselves as a joint and valuable community. Secondly, according to Jan Passman, cultural memory is based on texts, images and rituals specific to each society whose cultivation serves to stabilize and convey that society's self-image. So one might say that the song celebration were, and they still are, for Estonians precisely this kind of ritual. And ritual's task is, on the one hand, to fix certain behavioral patterns in people's memories, and on the other hand, to tie past, present and future into a whole. As a ritual, the song festival includes different elements, regularity, particular structure, use of symbols, emotionality. And regular cultivation of this ritual means to commemorate the first celebration as a symbol, but at the same time, it is always performed like the new event. Thirdly, Pierre Morand has formulated a concept of sites of memory. He claims a lieu de mémoire is any significant entity, whether material or non-material in nature, which has become a symbolic element of the memorial heritage of any community. So the purpose of sites of memory is to stop time, to block the work of forgetting. Sites of memory are not common in all cultures, but very in different cultural communities. Based on Nora's idea, one might say that the song festival is one of the most important sites of memory in Estonia. In my opinion, the Soviet era would be considered the only period of time when the song festival was in danger of becoming extinct. But 1960s became the turning point in blocking the work of forgetting, because this way of forgetting was undoubtedly the purpose of Soviet power while politicizing the previous festivals. But as it was said, the new and current arched stage was built in 1959, and as it was said earlier, the festival grounds became almost the sacred place for Estonians. A crucial role in keeping the song festivals alive and even strengthening them as a site of memory was the Jubilee Festival in 1969. In this time, a lot of different things were organized in the structure and in the order to re-establish and commemorate the former traditions. So, to conclude, this presentation discussed the history of Estonian song festivals during the Soviet era and the impact which the oppressive regime had on this tradition. The key term of the debate was nationalism, since the construction of this term revealed a serious opposition between Soviet power and the oppressed Estonians. Namely, let us note that the aim of Soviet cultural ideology was to unify different nations with their different roots and cultural memories. The slogan, national in form, socialist in content, marked just a short and temporary phase in the process of attaining socialist unity. But for the singing Estonians, the purpose of their cultural nationalism was the polar opposite. As a cultural community, they accentuated specific and unique features of their rituals and commemorated their sites of memory. Song festivals were, and they still are, one of the most significant entities and cornerstones of Estonian identity. So, thank you for your attention.